Okay, so we're on, as I said, 14a, Yud Zalad Ahmed Aleph, about halfway, a little bit more than halfway down. Gufa, it's about 7 or 8 lines down in the sort of wider lines. And it's Gufa is always a word. Gufa basically means we're returning to what we've talked about before. Gufa is quoting from a line that we've had earlier in the Gemara recently. So we've had this statement of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, and we're going to go through it and add a little bit more more explanation to it, a little bit more flesh to the details of it. Okay, so Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar had basically set out these 4 different types of places, these 4 different areas. Excuse me, he said Arba klolos haya. There are 4 different literally means principles. Rav Shimon ben Elazar Omer. So he would introduce these 4 binazikin with regards to damages. Kol shehu rishus lenizak velo lemazik. If you're in a place which is which belongs to the nizak but not the mazik, i.e. the damaged party, it belongs to the damaged party, and the damager has no stake in it. Chayev bakol. So we're picking up on that one specifically. When he had the 4 before, I think we went through all of them, right? But now we're, and actually I'm going to be, I didn't do this last time, but I might just sort of mark them off as 1, 2, 3, 4. Bit helpful to be able to find them. So he says basically over here, Chayev Bakol, you're liable for everything. So the Gemara tries to infer from here, Al Hakol Lokatani. It doesn't say on everything, but it says bakol, right? So we're trying to sort of, it's almost, it sounds a little bit further than al-hakol. Al-hakol means, yeah, you know, you chayv on everything that you would be liable for generally, but bakol sounds like it's taking it, it's a bit subtle, but it sounds like it's taking it a little bit of a step further. So, al-hakol lokatani, al-chayv bakol, bekule nezek, in any type of nezek, money. So what is this, you know, what's this adding, or who is this according to? So money, Rabbi Tarfon here, this must be the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon, that's what he's following. In this case, is they're following the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. What's Rabbi Tarfon's opinion? The Omar Mashune Keren Bechotzer Hanizak Nezek Sholem Mashanim. If it's an unusual type of Keren, usually we know Keren, Karen is only liable the first couple of times, is only liable half damages. But if it's an unusual type of Karen, so i.e. it's in the Chotzer, and Nizek shouldn't be there at all, then Nezek Shalom Shalom, that's the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. And we're basically saying that this must be the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar as well. When he's saying Chayev Bakol, you're liable in everything, that's, as we say, it's further than you would expect. And therefore, we must be coming to agree with Rabbi Tarfon that if the damage is taking place on the damaged party's property, then it's worse, right? So just to give the scenarios, if my animal damages your animal, not just damages, sorry, damages with keren, i.e. intentionally goes for it, right? You see, it goes for it in an unexpected way, and it sort of decides to intentionally cause damage to your animal in the street, then I'm going to be liable half damages the first couple of times, because that's okay. Well, we'll get back to that. Actually, we're getting closer to that. I think in the next daf or so, next 2 daf, we're going to get back to the whole chatzi nezek issue. But if it's on your property, if my animal decides to cause damage and goes for your animal on your property, then according to Rabbi Tarfon, you're going to be liable on everything. Nezek Shalem, and we're saying now that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar must be agreeing with that. Okay, so we're about 8 lines from the end. So the first word on the line is Meshalem. That's what you pay for everything. Amos Sefer, but now we question that a little bit because it seems to be contradicted. The later half of the sort of end of this, of these 4 klalos that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar had introduced, he had 4 different elements, talked about a property or a place which was lo lazer ve lo lazer, didn't belong to either one. That doesn't mean Rishus Arabim. Rishus Arabim belongs to everyone. Lo lazer ve lo lazer means it doesn't belong, you know, we're talking about Reuven and Shimon are the disputees in this case, you know, one has caused damage to the other, and we're talking about, you know, Levi's, the damage happened in Levi's property, something totally different. Kagon Chotzer She'ena Shel Shneihem, Chayev Bo, Al Hashein ve Al HaRegel. Then you are going to be liable for Shein and Regel. That's what Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar had said, Shein and Regel, i.e. if these 2 animals went in and ate, so So it sounds to me, is referring to where, let's say, Shimon puts his food in someone else's property, someone else's field, and Reuven puts his animal in someone else's field. The field doesn't belong to either of them, and the animal eats the food. Okay, that's Shein and Regel. So what does Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar say? Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says you're liable in that case, right? You're liable in that case. Usually, if you put your food where it shouldn't be, right, then you would expect that the person should, then you're not going to basically be able to claim back. Okay, if I put my food in your garden and your dog comes and eats it, right, then you're not going to be liable for that because my food shouldn't be there. But if I put it in a third party's place, field, and your animal shouldn't be there either, then you are going to be liable according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. So that's the case we're dealing with. So my lola zeh ve lola zeh, what exactly do we mean? Ile mo lola zeh ve lola zeh, klal, that they have, that's the way I've set it up until now. Okay, does that mean that they don't have any ownership over it at all? No, ela da'acher, right, means, is it really the way that we've just set that up, right? The scenario that we just described, is that really what it's referring to? V'ho bo'ino, Ubier bis de acher. Surely we require ubier bis de acher. That's the language that the Torah uses to describe the damage that's done by Shein. And ubier bis de acher makes it sound like it has to be in another field, right? In a different field. Veleka, and that doesn't exist. Rashi explains shahara yesh lemazik reshusba lehikones peris. Sorry, have I skipped a bit?
So the guy that's got planting his food in another field, did he do it asking the fellow's permission or not?
It's a good question. I thought not, but then now I've got myself.
Rabbi, isn't there?
Yes.
Perhaps the difference is between a field that belongs to another person and the Rosh Hashanah, which doesn't belong to anybody.
Right. No, here we are talking about belonging to a third person, aren't we?
Well,
not initially. Lo bazer ve lo bazer.
Lo lazer ve lo lazer means...
So it could either be Rosh Hashanah, or it could
be... I don't think that's what it's...
...ownership by a third party.
Well, here, so the Gemara is really asking, what exactly are we referring to? So we say, if you're talking about that it belongs to a third party, right? Lo lazer ve lo lazer klal, ela da'acher, it belongs to a third party. Then why would you be liable, I think is the point.
Well,
why would you be liable?
Because if the guy who plants the food has asked permission to plant the food there, and if the guy puts his animal there has not asked permission to put his animal there, then he's liable.
Then he's what, sorry?
Then he will be liable because he did it of his own free will.
The animal shouldn't be there, you're saying?
Yeah.
But the food shouldn't be there either, then?
Well, no. If the guy says... to the third party, can I plant my food there? And the guy says,
yeah, correct, right. Correct.
And then if the guy...
No, but then that would be reshus, but then that would be reshus, right? Then that would be that, in a sense, it's not your property, but it's with permission. So that's, I'm not sure that's what it's referring to. I think it's referring to a case where you don't have any, where you don't. But I think the Gemara's problem seems to be based on the verse. So the Gemara is basically saying, ubier bisde acher makes it sound like sde acher is a sort of a, is a totally... Stay acher, the implication is basically I think that Rashi is on a different part of the Rashi, if you want my honest, but I'm looking for different words in the Gemara where he might be commenting.
Shimon's also translates it as a field or another, i.e. belonging to another person.
But then that should work if it belongs to another person. That's right. Isn't that the point? Bier is day acher. If it's belonging to another person, then that's exactly the scenario we're describing. It's strange to get so confused over this. What does lolazev surely mean? It belongs to somebody else. Lolazev. What is the lozev lozel? We're talking about two people, not. Really? No. Yeah, the location it belongs to, not this one, i.e., not the damaged and not the damager. Isn't that what it's referring to?
In which case, then neither is responsible on that basis. Then
neither is responsible.
In other words, if a guy plants his thing there without...
Where you shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be. If the animal's there, then it shouldn't be. Then neither party should be responsible because they took it. They did this. They did these activities at their own risk.
Well, that's the question because the person who planted their food there shouldn't be, or not just planted, you left a box of fruits or whatever it is. Yeah, you left something there which shouldn't be there. Yes, that's true. You shouldn't have done that. But the other person shouldn't have put their animal there. So in a sense, they are responsible. They are responsible, but you as the damaged party were irresponsible.
Because both people's actions were at their own risk.
But the damager hasn't. You're saying there was no risk for the damager because he didn't. Because he got lucky. If his animal would have eaten the owner's fruits, then he would have been stuck. Yeah, he shouldn't have had his animal in there, right?
Well,
shouldn't have had his animal in
there.
This is the question. That's the question that we're dealing with, really.
The Steins aren't English. It's making it very, very precise on field of another.
Yes.
Meaning that the damage must occur in the damaged party's field. Is not good enough if it occurs in a field that was being used by the damaged party that doesn't actually belong to the damaged party. That's what he's saying.
Oh, that's what Rashi is saying. Oh, yeah. Rashi is explaining the words, but in a...
damage take place in the field of...
Got it. Okay, sorry. Okay.
I
think that's helpful. So when Rashi says Shahare Yesh Lamazik Rashus Bo Lahachnis Peresov, he's not describing the scenario. He's saying that is what the words Bier Bisde Acher mean. Sorry, Boinan Bisde Acher Veleke. In order to be liable. I think that's helpful. It's still not. Well, let's try and I guess we'll say it. Sometimes things sound different when you say them than when they're in your head. So I think. If I've understood correctly, with everybody's help, bisdei acher, what the Gemara is basically trying to say is that when the Torah uses the phrase bisdei acher, that must mean the damaged party's property. Uvir bisdei acher, i.e., the person's animal has caused damage on another field. The implication of that is the field of the damaged party. I.e. the person whose fruit was eaten, right? And therefore, in this case, Veleka, we don't have that. We don't have that element because it's on a third party's field. It's lo lozer, velo lozer. So, ela pshita, lo lozer, velo lozer, ela dechat, right? So, it doesn't mean lo lozer, velo lozer. It means it's not exclusively... It's interesting. I'm not sure what lo lozer, velo lozer means. I mean, ela dechat means it belongs to one person. It belongs to the damaged party. That's what the Gemara is concluding, right? It belongs to the Nizak. I think lo lozer simply means it doesn't belong to both of them. It's just a very roundabout way of saying it doesn't belong to both of them. Sounds to me more like it's saying it doesn't belong to either of them. But what the Gemara is concluding is it means it doesn't belong to both of them. Okay, it means it's your garden, right? Your garden. You're the damaged party. It's my garden. It's a very classic case of Shein and Regel, right? Your animal comes into my property and eats my fruits, but I guess I'm just puzzled by the language of lo lozer velo lozer. It basically means what Rav Shimon and Lazar are saying is it doesn't belong to both of them. It belongs to one of them, i.e. it belongs to the damaged party, and therefore that's why you're going to be liable. Right? Implication of this is that, although I have a feeling this might be debated, but the implication of this does make it sound like... Oh, here, let's look it up. I'll read inside in just a moment. I think it is debated, this point. Okay, so let's just draw the scenario again. Initially, the Gemara thought lo lozer velo lozer means the property of... let's just give them the names. Okay, we'll talk about Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Okay, Reuven is the damager. Reuven's animal. Reuven's the one who owns the animal. Shimon is the one who owns the fruit, and Levi is someone else. So initially, the Gemara thinks that we're talking about the damage occurring on Levi's property, right? Lo lozer velo lozer means it doesn't belong to Reuven and it doesn't belong to Shimon, so therefore it belongs to Levi, and that's where the damage occurs. And the Gemara doesn't like that, because it says that when the Torah refers to Sde Acher is implying we're talking about Shimon's property, right? And therefore that's when you're going to be liable, and so it rejects that. And it says Lo Lozeh V'Lo Lozeh means Ela Dechad. It means Lo Lozeh V'Lo Lozeh doesn't mean it belongs to neither Reuven nor Shimon, it means it doesn't belong to both Reuven and Shimon together, and therefore it belongs to one of them, i.e. it belongs to Shimon, right? It belongs to the person who owns the fruits, the food, and Reuven's animal came and ate the fruits, and therefore he Reuven is liable on Shimon's property. Okay, so great. So that's the conclusion of the Gemara. But it has left a little bit ambiguous what is the scenario. Let's say Reuven's animal eats Shimon's fruits on Levi's field, right? The Gemara doesn't actually say what it certainly implies, I think, implies that you would be potter in that case, that you would be exempt, but it's not so straightforward. So the Rosh, I have a note here actually that says that the Rosh does say that you're exempt. The Rosh says that you're exempt in that case. However, it seems that in the Yerushalmi, the Talmud Yerushalmi, there's a debate on this point. And there's a debate on this point. Nechleku hatanoim b'davar shesvaras apatur b'zehi kivin shenema b'parshazu meitav sadehu, from the best of their field. Okay, so again, it seems to be sort of centering around the language, but the Rosh certainly says that you'd be exempt in that case, but sounds like others would disagree. Okay, so and sounds like George, you would have sided with that you'd be exempt. Okay, that you would sided that you'd be exempt, but it sounds like others might think, I don't know, I would feel like you should be liable. Maybe that's just me. I feel like we've got to look at it more from the perspective of the damager. I'm not sure I fully understand the Rosh's exemption over here. I'm not sure I do. Okay, but either way, back to our Gemara, we're about six lines from the end. That over here, we're basically talking about Shimon's field. Okay, the food that was eaten were eaten in the field of the person who owns the food. Ukatani Sefer. And continues the Gemara to explain, and it says at the end, Tam Mishalim Mishalim Chatzei Nezek Umuad Mishalim Nezek Shalim. And we also continue from there and just clarify, you know, as you would, just in classic cases, that if it's the first couple of times of goring, not of shein, but of goring, then you pay half damages and Muad Mishalim Nezek Shalim as normal. Asa'un le Rabbanon. So that must be according to Rabbanon, who disagree with Rabbi Tarfon, right? So we clearly are not agreeing with Rabbi Tarfon, because Rabbi Tarfon, right at the beginning, right, we've already forgotten Rabbi Tarfon, but Rabbi Tarfon was saying that if you are Rashus Lanizak Velo Lamazik, if you are on Shimon's property, and the scenarios we're drawing are as follows. Where is the damage occurring? So in the first part, of what Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar was saying, he's clearly drawing a scenario where the damage has occurred on the damaged party's property, and he says that it sounds like he's saying you're liable entirely. Okay, if your animal gores, then you're chayav nezek shalim, full damages. Okay, so therefore that seems to fit with Rabbi Tarfon. But yet at the end, where he's talking again about the damaged party's property, he sort of throws in as an aside, you know, while he's talking about damage that occurs on the damaged party's property, he's mainly talking about Shane and Ragel. But at the end, he also just sort of, happens to throw in there, oh, and by the way, Tam pays Chatzi Nezek, and Muad pays Nezek Shalom, which sounds like Tam pays half damages. So it seems to be a contradiction between the first statement that he's making, right, early on, and the later statement that he's making, where he seems to be siding in one state, you know, the initial stages with Rabbi Tarfon, and the latter stages, he's siding with the Rabbanon. Does everybody follow that? A little bit. The question is centering around, we spent a lot of time trying to figure out what he's talking about in case of Shein and Regel, right? But the question is really centering around what Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is saying in the case of Kerem, okay, in the case of goring damage. The first statement that he makes it sound like Chayev Bakol, makes it sound like he's siding with Rabbi Tarfon, that if the animal gores in the damaged person's property, then you'd be liable full damages. Whereas the end of his statement makes it sound like he, or in fact, explicitly says that if that the damage would only pay half payment, that the tam would only pay half payment as normal, and we're understanding that he's referring there to the damage on the damaged person's property, and therefore it seems to be a contradiction between the two. Okay, so Katani Sefer Tam Mashalim. So again, just to fill in the words, seven lines from the end. Ukatani Sefer Tam Mashalim Chatzi Nezek Umud Mashalim Nezek Shalom Asan LaRabbanon. That seems to fit with the opinion of the Rabbanon. The Omri Mashuna Keren BeChatzer HaNizak, disagreeing with Rabbi Tarfon, they say that even if the damage occurs on the damaged person property, Chatzi Nezek Hu Mashalim. Reisha Rabbi Tarfon for Sefer Rabbanon. Right, sounds like the beginning is following the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon, the end is following the opinion of Rabbanon, and that doesn't work. So the Gemara says, actually, it does work. Okay, it's not such a big deal. In the Ha Omer Le Shmuel Rabbi Yehuda, Shinana Shvok Masnisin V'Ta Abbas. Right, leave the Mishnah and follow me. Reisha Rabbi Tarfon for Sefer Rabbanon. Okay, don't get so worked up about the sort of the contradictions over here. Rabbi Shimon and Lazar is in a sense sort of providing educational principles rather than paskening per se, and therefore it's not such a big it's not such a big problem to have seemingly siding with one opinion at the beginning and one opinion at the end, and he's just simply bringing all the different pieces of information over here. Okay, so that's how the Gemara concludes over here. Reisha Rabbi Tarfon v'Sefer Rabbanon, that's fine. Okay, Ravina Mishmei de Rava Omar Kula Rabbi Tarfon here. Ravina says no. We will try and reconcile these two. He says the whole thing is the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. Therefore, the second half is the part we've got to deal with. The second half, how does that fit with the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon? He says you have to relearn lo lo zeh lo lo zeh. Probably the way that we did beforehand. Lo lo zeh lo lo zeh means lo lo zeh lo lo zeh leperos, right? That they didn't both own it with regards to fruit, but ela dechat, right? Lo zeh velo zeh lishvorim. So in a sense, there was joint ownership over here with regards to the animal, but there wasn't joint ownership with regards to fruits. So we were both able to bring delegabe shein havilo chatzer hanizak, and therefore with regards to shein, with regards to damage that was done by eating the animal, damaged party had the right to put their fruits there, and therefore it's considered to be chotzer hanizak. But with regard legabe keren havila rishus harabim, with regards to keren damages where the animal gores, then it's considered like a rishus harabim because it belongs to both of them, and therefore are you going to pay half damages for a tam? You're going to pay full damages for a muad, and therefore, basically, it all seems to fit very well. And it sounds like he's siding with Rabbi Tarfon throughout. And therefore, basically, if it was on the damaged party's property, then you would pay full damages. But in this case, we're dealing with you having both a sort of split ownership, right? Joint ownership with regards to Karen. You could both keep your animal there, but only one of you, only the damaged party, owns it with regards to fruit, or I shouldn't say own, has rights to put their fruit over there. Okay, so a little bit the opposite. I feel like we had the opposite one last time we learnt together, where we talked about a place where you could both put your food, but you couldn't put your animals. So now we seem to have the other way around, a little bit, where you could both put your animals, but only one person can put their fruit. Okay, funny sorts of like halfway house arrangements, but that's what we're trying to. It always helps. You take it to the extremes, then it helps us to figure it out.
Also include fruit that
still on bush.
Yeah, it can. Yes, correct. Yeah, as George was pointing out about planting stuff. Yes, doesn't have to just be boxes of fruits. Yeah, bushes and things. Yeah, berries off bushes, all that sort of thing. Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Does this concept of tan and mur apply only to Kerry?
Yes, 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 absolutely. Correct, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, it's specific to Kerry. Exactly. Yeah, very important. Okay, so Ihochi, there's the last line. Okay, halfway through the last line. Ihochi, if that is the case, Arba'a. Shlosha Havu, it's not really Arba'a, right? He started at the Rav Shimon ben Elazar, introduced to us, he said, I'm going to bring you four different types of places. But in the end, he's saying, according to Rabbi, according to the other opinion, right? Unless I'm saying, according to the first opinion, where is this? Yeah, Yehochi Arba'a, Klan Rak, Shlosha Havu, yeah, exactly. There's not really four principles. There are three principles, right? There's three principles. So Omer of Nachman Bar Yehuda, because now we have basically lumped them together, right? We've basically, according to Ravina's answer, we've lumped together the very first one and the last one. So he responds, no, he says Shlosha Klolos Ba'arba'a Mekomos. It means there were three principles, three types of liabilities, let's say, but Arba Mekomos is in four different places. So because it's a slightly different place, so that's why it was added on as the fourth one. Okay, but again, that's sort of a technicality as to why he said four as opposed to three, why he introduced it with four as opposed to three. Okay, we're going to go back to the Mishnah here, and the Mishnah is very, Mishnah, we're going to go like literally... This Mishnah is maybe the most classic example. I heard Rabbi Rosner quote on Daf Vov. Was it Daf Vov? When was the last Mishnah that we had? Daf Hey. Anyway, whenever we had a Mishnah a little while ago, that one of the commentaries says that the Mishnayos in Bava Kamma, particularly in the beginning of Bava Kamma, the first parak of Bava Kamma, are very. I don't know what the word. He definitely didn't use this word, but the way I understood it was sort of choppy, they don't flow necessarily as sort of simply. So what we tend to do is take, you know, one word here, one word there. Al hakol, buckle. Does it mean this and that? So we're going to do that a lot with this Mishnah. Okay, shum kesef, shava kesef. You know, it's going to be very sort of like. Pull out a phrase and try and figure out what each phrase means. It's not quite the sort of smooth. I mean, Mishnayos are often very cryptic and by design, but these ones sort of particularly have a little bit difficult to follow as a flow. So either way, I guess that just helps me to think of them a little bit better. Okay, Shum Kesef, Mishnah at the top of your Dalad Ahmed Bet 14b. Shum Kesef, the value. This is again referring to what to liability, basically. So to how the payments are made, or when you should be chayav, when you should be liable for payment. Shum kesef, you have to figure out the value of the damage that was done. Okay, I mean, the truth is we're going to explain each one in the Mishnah. It's difficult to translate the Mishnah. Shava kesef, the value of money, i.e. monetary value. Doesn't have to be money itself, but it has to be monetary, something of monetary value. And we'll, again, the Gemara will explain what exactly that means. Bifne beisdin, in front of a court. Ve'al pi edim, and with witnesses. Bnei chorin, right, free people. Bnei bris, they have to be Jewish. Ve'hanashim bichlal, and women are included as well. They're also included with regards to damages, right? Again, damage, all that sort of, all that we're talking about, applies to women as well. Not allowed to damage, going to be claiming back for damages, all that sort of thing. Va'anizak, va'hamazik, be'tashlumin, and the damaged party and the damaging party all have to sort of, settle up their bills, right? They have to settle up their bills. Yes. We are going to talk a little bit about quantification of damage. We're not going to talk much about. There's not much. Depends what you mean by quantification of damage.
We're working out with witnesses and with this monetary appraisal how much this damage is worth. Are we talking about?
we take it that the damage has occurred, then this is the way it would be paid.
We are going to talk a little bit about we're not going to go into detail of it because the detail is very dependent on time and place. It's not going to talk about, I don't know, how do you decide what an animal is worth and things like that. We're not going to do that here. But we are going to talk about the fact that you need to, that you can't just sort of, well, it's very early. The first couple of the lines of the Gemara talk about the fact that you can't just sort of estimate and say, oh, you know, more or less, you know, we're basically there, you know, okay, you did with it, tit for tat. We'll see a sort of a tit for tat scenario at the beginning of over here. You know, you did a bit of this and I did a bit of that, so we'll just call it quits, you know, and that's fine. So that's that doesn't work. But we don't get into the details of that. There's not much on that in terms of damages to property. We talk a lot about it with human damages in the eighth parak, I think it's the eighth parak. It talks about what type of damage is liable to a person when you cause damage to a person. I think the Gemara doesn't go into that in much detail because, as I said, it's so dependent on time and place. You know, like you could spend daf talking about it's almost in a sense it's not. You have to bring in experts to do that. You bring in. But again, the court. When you say the court is based on halacha. The court, it's not for the court to decide. That's the point. It's the court will bring in the experts, but in a sense, we're talking about a Beis Din over here, right? So a Beis Din will have expertise in Bava Kamma, but my point is Bava Kamma doesn't really talk about how you figure out the payments, because I think that with regards to human damages, it does, but with regards to these sorts of things, it's so dependent on the. What are we going to do? How do you figure out fruits? How do you figure out? We'll talk about it when we talk about it with regards to Shane. It will talk about Shane when you have, let's say, a bush, yeah, of with some berries on it. How do you figure out? How do you quantify the cost of the berries that were eaten off of this bush? Right? How do you figure that out? It does go into that sort of detail, but not over here. Yeah. I think my point was just that if we start talking about how to assess the value of a cow, then that's very specific to a cow, okay? But there's everything in the whole world is going to be, you know, liable. You could damage anything. You damage books, you damage furniture, you damage cars, you know, all sorts of things. You know, there's so many elements. Okay. Fine. Okay. So that's the Mishnah. So four lines down. Let's start with the Gemara. My Shum Kesef. What exactly does this mean, Shum Kesef? What's the Gemara? What's the Gemara explaining to us when it says you have to do it based on the value of the money of the damage that was done? Omer of Yehuda, Shum Ze Lo Yehei Ela BeKesef. You have to sort of monetarily quantify what this damage was. Right, Rashi says, "Leihei Ela BeKesef Sheyehu Based in Shamin," that a court should properly, you know, assess. Again, with experts, kama shove hanezek mone o masayim v'kach yishalim lo. Right, that it has to be based on, as we say, proper quantification. The tonu rabbon leihayel b'kesef tanina. Right, tanina lahod the tonu rabbon. Basically, this is similar to the teaching that we have as follows. Pora shehizika talis, vitalis shehizika pora. So you have a cow that caused damage to a talis. Doesn't literally mean a talis, but a garment, right, that a person's wearing, and the garment caused damage to the cow. Ein omrim tate se pora vitalis, vitalis bepora. You can't say one did damage to one did damage to the other. What do you mean one did damage to one did damage to the other? So I think the way I've let's see if Rashi. Yeah. Okay. So Rashi says here. Rashi says shedorsa aleha bechotzer hanizak, that the animal trampled on the talis. It doesn't mean trampled intentionally. Again, it's walking along and it caused damage to your garment as it's walking along. Vitalis shehizi kapara b'rishizarabim, and the clothing managed to cause damage to the animal in the Rishus Arabim. Gagon Shen Nitkala Behema Batalis, that tripped over Vinishba Regalapara, and the animal broke its leg as a result. So the animal sort of is managing to cause damage to the cloak. Let's say your cloak is trailing on the floor or whatever it might be. You know, your cloak is there. So if it's in Rishus Arnizak, is almost like all in one. That the animal trips over the cloak, so the cloak gets damaged and the animal gets damaged, and the question is who pays who. So you can't just come along and say, you know what, you did this and you did that, you know, that's fine, you know, because we had a bit of this and a bit of that, so everything's going to be okay, and that's fine. Now, unless I'm mistaken, on the Rinnan says this explicitly, but I'm pretty sure if you both agree to do that, then that's okay. Okay, if you both agree to say, don't worry about it, right? You can what's called bimochel. You can be mochel in any case, right? If someone causes you damage and you say, don't worry about it, then that's fine. That's your prerogative to do that. But the point over here is from a din perspective, from a sort of a strict justice perspective, you do have to actually do an accounting to figure out what exactly, you know, which one costs more, what this one costs this and this one costs that, and what's the sum total at the end, what's the liability, and which way is it gonna end up going. Pause the recording. Oh, okay. Remind me at the end. I have a scenario. Maybe I'll ask the experts over here. Not for the recording, but I have a scenario which I'm wondering about. Okay. Okay. So that's the initial Gemara. I mean, it's very interesting to think what exactly is the Gemara. What's the Gemara telling you over here? Right. It seems too obvious a little bit. This part of the Gemara, the fact that Gemara is saying you can't just say, your animal caused a bit of damage and my cloak caused a bit of damage, so let's just call it quits. I mean, you can say that if you choose to, but that's not.
It doesn't provide food for argument here. That's why they're objecting to it.
Yeah, but again, it should be obvious. I think this should be obvious, is it right? You'd have said this is very obvious. Okay, I'll try and find someone who talks about it. I'm pretty sure someone addresses this. Okay, but either way, the Gemara is basically saying that it has to be done with an accounting, has to be done properly, and has to be assessed. Okay. Fine. Shove kesef. What does it mean that it has to be monetary value? So the Tana Rabbanon, as our sages have said, shove kesef melamed she'ein based in nizkokin ella linechosim. Sorry, ella linechosim sheyesh lahen achrayis. That based in basically are only going to deal with what's called nechosim sheyesh lahen achrayis, which basically means property. Okay, that's what. They don't go down. She'ein based in Niskokin el nechosim she'ein lam she'ish lam achrayis. Right? Correct. They only take from property. That's the only place. That's the only place you end up taking. Aval im kodam nizak v'tofas metaltelin based in govin lomehen. But if the person has already taken some metaltelin, then that works. Okay, then that actually does work to pay back the damage. So the based in a sense not going to force them. Funny, because didn't we say the opposite in a previous Gemara? Melamed she'ein based in niskokin lipara minham. Sorry? For sure you can't do that, but let's say you did already. Or is it the case is not going to always be where you took it, but let's say you have it. Let's say you have something that belongs to somebody. You know, you borrowed it, or they gave it to you, and now they say that, yeah. You know, whatever, you've ended up with it. You found it as a, you know, you have.
If it was lent to you, you can't keep it.
Then. Maybe you can, if they owe you money. If they owe you money, and then...
Given as a loan because he needs to do some hoeing and he hasn't got a hoe.
Yeah.
But the expectation is that it
will
be returned.
It will be returned, but let's say he owes you something out.
But that should be collected by the Beth Din, not by.
It should be, but let. So you're now in court. The Beth Din saying let's look at this. Let's look at this as a whole, right? As a unit. So metaltelin, they're not going to collect from metaltelin, but they are going to. but they are going to. But if it's already there, then that's going to work, right? If it's already there, then that's going to work.
Unless they will enforce from land.
Yes.
Does that presuppose that there is a guarantee of existence? Which seems to me a bit of a weird supposition, because you wouldn't have a guarantee of land against every eventuality. You know, if your uncle's trampling through and there's a cloak down there and the case described happens, you know, the assumption seems to be here that there's guarantee of the land itself that Bethding can then take to settle the monetary claim.
Right.
Which to me sounds a rather left-wing concept.
What was the alternative is that you have the debts without ever...
Do you really attach, if something happens, I don't know, bad example maybe, let's talk about a field, is the assumption that any damage that is caused on that field, or any damage that occurs, that damage stands as surety for any payment due as a result of the decision that damage you.
I feel like we're overcomplicating. I'm not sure I'm following all the things. I feel like we're overcomplicating it. A person owes money for damages and can't pay it.
Yeah.
So how are you going
to? So the best thing would go to the land.
But as opposed to what? As opposed to just saying you don't have you. That's it. Because you don't have any money in your pocket.
As opposed to saying, well, you know, the assumption is not that there's a guarantee which covers that. Therefore, we can seize land or dispose of land to settle the damages.
Again, the person doesn't have any money to pay for their damage.
Yeah.
Should be done?
We're talking about guarantees here, aren't we? We're talking about the guarantee of the land. Sure, the primary
responsibility of the debtor is to pay it with money.
Yeah.
And it only comes into enforcement if he doesn't pay it with money.
Right.
Therefore, if he's got land or a lawnmower, he could say, well, until you pay me, I'm keeping this.
So in other words, Bethden doesn't have any standing to settle this until the argument is that
he doesn't pay.
Okay.
No, the Bethden can settle it, but the point is, yeah, it doesn't seize, I think, is the point.
Because the Bethden can't go and take money from the man.
No, Shovek, I said, can't take... Yes, correct. Right. No, you could take money, I think. Doesn't take ein bezin diskokin ela lin nechosim she'ein ha'em achrayis. I think in terms of property, the contrast here is between movable property, right? Other types of things other than land, right? Not money. Money is its own category, but I think here we're referring to property. Stock or whatever it might be, all sorts of other things. But I think what's interesting is that we'd seen in the past that the Gemara. Anyway, sorry, the Gemara. Let's keep going in the Gemara and then we'll come back to it, because the Gemara continues to explain this. Okay, Omer Rabba Bar Ula, right? Rabba Bar Ula says, what does this mean? Dover Hashove Kol Kesef, something which is worth the entire amount of the money, right? I.e., that you're going to pay the entirety. Mainihu dover she'ein lo ono, something which is clearly not subject to the penalty of ono. Okay, avodim ushdaris nam. So something which is not subject to the penalty of ono. So let's take a step back here and explain ono briefly, and then we'll plug that back into our Gemara. So ono is a prohibition in the Torah to overcharge, basically, and ono has a few different parameters to it. So you're not allowed to say the simplest. There are lots of different parameters to it, but simply speaking, ono applies as follows. If I try to sell you something, and I overcharge you, if I charge you under a sixth, under a sixth more. Okay, so this thing is really worth whatever it is. Let's say 120 pounds. Okay, and I charge you under 140. Right, then you're okay. We're okay. Or there's no comeback. Okay, let's put it like that for now. Correct. You can't. The sale is valid. and the money is valid. If it's 1/6 exactly, then the sale is valid, but you have to pay back the extra. Okay, so if it's £140 exactly, then the sale is valid and you have to give back £20. Okay, and if it's more than that, then the entire sale is null and void. Okay, as though it never happened. If it was more than that, then the whole thing returns to nothing. So what I wanted to, but the reason I was hesitant before is that I think the Ramban says very clearly that if it's less than 1/6, there's still a prohibition. Okay, if you're intentionally doing this, there's still a prohibition, even though the sale counts, even though the sale is valid, still a prohibition to doing this. Okay, but the other element is that there's a concept of what we call ein ona'a lekarkos, that this applies to most things, but it doesn't apply to property. Why doesn't it apply to property? Because property has massive in a sense, property is much more worth whatever people are going to pay for it. Right? It's not about its inherent value in quite the same way, and therefore ein ona'a lekarkos, you can't overcharge for property because these things change much more significantly, and therefore land is going to not be subject to ona'a, generally speaking. Tosus does actually say, I have a feeling it might be over here. Maybe it's not over here. Okay, unless I'm mistaken, I'm pretty sure Tosus says, might be Tosus or it might be somebody else, that even within, when it says ein ona'a lekarkos, it doesn't mean never. Tosus does say that there's still a limit on ona'a for property, up to 100%, he says. If you go over 100% more, then that would be considered ona'a. And actually, the price would revert. Not the price would revert, the sale would revert, rather. The sale would revert. Okay, so that's a little bit about ona'a. So what are we referring to? Dovar she'ein lo ona'a refers to karka. But it's not just karka. Okay, there are other things which also are subject or not subject, which also are excluded from the rules of ona'a, such as avadim ushtaros. Okay, servants and contracts. Okay, the truth is I'm going to leave off contracts a little bit because Rashi says, I think it's a bit unclear what they're referring to here, buying a contract, what exactly that means, but let's say avodim as an example, right? So that also is not subject to ona'a. So ela omar rabba bar ula, what does it mean? Dovar hanikne bekesef, something which is bought. Shava kesef means something which doesn't. It's nothing to do with ona'a. We're not talking about ona'a here. It means something which can be bought with money. So the Gemara responds: Avodim ushtaros naminikne bekesef. What do you mean? You can also buy them with money. So Ela Omer of Ashi shava kesef velo kesef. What it means? Something which is worth money, but not money itself. So hani kulhu kesef ninhu. All of these types of things. Excuse me, metaltalin and all those sorts of things would be considered money. They are considered money in that sense, and therefore shava kesef in this case is basically coming to refer to only property. That's what the Beis Din in a sense is going to be sort of claiming in this scenario. But something which is kesef itself, which is money itself, is not going to be liable in this case. It's a very strange. It's a very puzzling Gemara for a number of reasons. Number one is that in every other area, and I didn't really see... In every other area, when we refer to shava kesef, when we refer to something being worth money, but not money itself, it refers to all sorts of things that are not money, i.e. cash is cash, and then anything else is shava kesef. I mean, for example...
I was thinking of work of art. I mean, a work of art
is worth what somebody's paid. No, that's you're talking about from an ona'a question. That's a different scenario. I'm just talking about the concept of when we use the phrase shava kesef. I'll come back to that. That's also an interesting one. But just the concept of something which is shava kesef, we refer to everything in other Gemaras as shava kesef. I don't know, this pencil is shava kesef. You know, books are worth shava kesef. Anything, you know, your phone is shava kesef. Everything is usually referred to. I think that's how the Gemara uses the term. All the time that you can pay with money, you can pay something with money, and in some cases you can use shove kesef. I'll give you an example. You're supposed to use money. I'll give you an example where it doesn't work. Okay, when we talk about Maisa Sheni, right? Maisa Sheni, you have to do what's called pidyon. If you can't, you're supposed to take Maisa Sheni, you're supposed to take it to Jerusalem to eat it. When you have your fruits that are liable for Maisa Sheni, if you have an orchard, let's say in Israel, or anything, a tree. Can you have a tree with a few oranges? Okay, so you're supposed to take them to Jerusalem and eat them in the temple. So we don't have that, right? So what are you supposed to do? So nowadays what we do is and once upon a time you used to do this as well. If you lived in the Golan, by the time you get to Jerusalem, the fruits are going to be no good. So what did you do? So you have to do what's called pidyon Maisa Sheni. You have to swap over basically the value. You put the Maisa Sheni holiness, right, the sanctity onto the money. You take that money to Jerusalem and you buy things with that money in Jerusalem. So that's called it is a little bit like that. But the pidyon Maisa Sheni can only be done with kesef. It can't be done with shoveh kesef. You can't transfer it onto something else, some other type of value. It has to be done with kesef as opposed to shoveh kesef. No, with a ring. No, correct. That's a ring is a classic example of shoveh kesef. That's a great example. So a ring would be considered shoveh kesef. It's not considered money. It's not a coin. What's the difference between money and shoveh kesef? It means shoveh kesef is something which has a value on it, an inherent value. Kesef is once upon a time it doesn't, but kesef is the value is based on the stamp in a sense that's on it, right? The value of a 20p coin is not because it's worth 20p, although unless I'm mistaken, I have a feeling someone said, didn't they? I don't know if that's in the UK or in America. I feel like pennies are worth more than a penny or something, or the weight of a penny. I don't remember. Yeah, anyway. But yeah, technically you could melt them all down, although it's illegal. But in terms of value, I think you might be better off to do that. But the yes, that's the point. The point is kesef is specifically, that's the difference, that's the halachic difference. So it has to be, so usually that's how we use the term. That's why I'm a little bit puzzled why the Gemara over here seems to be saying shava kesef means means only karkos. So I mean, Rashi just sort of presents it as the way the Gemara is presenting it, which is dahainu karkos. This is now the Rashi, it's like the last, almost the last Rashi on the... that matches up with the Gemara, that sort of is on the not the ones that are underneath, but the ones that are, okay. Ela Omer of Ashi Shava Kesef, Dahainu Karkos, i.e. Shava Kesef in this case is clearly explicitly clearly referring to land. V'hochi mashma, the implication is Shava Kesef Yishalem V'lo Kesef Atmo, you should be paying with Shava Kesef but not with Kesef Atmo. V'hani Kulhu Metaltalim V'avadim Ushtaras Kesef Ninu, all of those types of things, i.e. rings and books and whatever, you know, all that sort of stuff is considered to be kesef in this case, right? It seems to be kesef ninhu, demotzi la'amtuyinhu, mimasa lamasa umizdavni. I think the problem is that they fluctuate in value too much. That's the point. You sort of take them somewhere else and it's worth something more in one place or something less in another place. And that's also the ono'o issue. I think that's also part of the problem. Coming back to David's point, David's making an interesting point, which is lots of things. When we say enu nor lekarkos, it sounds like it's because property's value is so dependent on desire, you know. So I don't think that's what ono'o means, because you're right. Anything is like that. Anything with it doesn't just have to be paintings. Anything with what do they call it? Provenance? Anything with provenance, you know, sort of like suddenly gains value and things like that. So I don't think that's the point. I think that the ono'o issue is that it still fluctuates, right? Whereas with property, it's in a sense it's stuck in one place, right? And the value of it is very, very discernible, but what's the word? It's almost like two opposite ends of the spectrum. It's very unchangeable in one sense, right? Very unchangeable, because you can't just ship it off somewhere else and say I'll sell it in a different place and then it will be worth more. In that sense, it's very unchangeable, but it's very changeable in the sense that when a market shifts, then it's going to be entirely dependent on that. Right. So it's a little bit. It's basically that's why it ends up in its own unique category. I mean, the application, what David is pointing to, is the fact that Ono'ah does have a little bit of difficulty being applied nowadays, because we do have a lot of things. I don't know what they used to have in those times, but I feel like nowadays there are a lot more things which the price tends to be a little bit more variable. Right? It's very, very hard to sort of put a specific price on things. They had this case. There was a very interesting Ono'ah case a number of years ago, where it actually still comes up every so often. That sort of happens every few years. There was one where I think it was with El Al. El Al posted every so often. Some airlines make mistakes, and I'm trying to remember the scenario. What was it? I think I remember. I think basically a few years ago, someone figured out that the way El Al had posted their flight prices, if you said you were going to pay in Danish, what was it, krona or something, or whatever they had, if you chose that as your method of payment, so the first class El Al flights was something like, I don't know, £100 or whatever, something ridiculous. So you just say basically with the way they'd uploaded it to the website, right, the algorithm wasn't working, and basically ended up getting very, very cheap tickets. So a lot of people did that, and it's one of those things that once one person finds it out, so they post it on their message board, send it around to friends, you know, within an hour, 1,000 people have bought flights at this price or whatever. So the question was, is that Ono'ah? Is it? It's like Ono'ah the other way, right? It's almost underselling. So there was a lot of interesting discussion. I do think it wasn't the right thing to do, and I would recommend, if someone does that, I would recommend not going for those sorts of deals, which are clearly not deals, right? Which are clearly exploiting a mistake that that someone has made. They don't have to honour it. A lot of the truth is, I think nowadays with the contracts and stuff, they always say. They always have a clause which says, you know, they don't have to honour these things anyway, and they can change it around. But what was interesting in that sort of case is that what is the price of a first class ticket? So that was part of the discussion. Okay, even in the case where first class ticket might go a little bit higher, a little bit lower, you know, might be somewhere between, no one says it's £100, right? Everyone agrees there's a certain point at which it clearly is Ono'ah. So again, you have the same thing as well nowadays. What is the price of a second class, a fifth class Ford Escort, right? So yes, it might be a little bit fluctuation, but no one says it's £60,000, you know, so that's for sure.
It's overcharging now, but not undercharging.
Yeah, it works in both directions, unless I'm mistaken. Really?
I think it's only overcharging.
Really?
Yeah.
I have to look that up, because I remember that. I remember Ono'ah being part of that discussion.
If it's undercharged, you'd have to pay back.
I think the point was taking advantage. Right? I thought it was to do with taking advantage.
It applies to both buyer and
seller. I thought, maybe I'm wrong, but I remember that being part of the discussion, but I will look it up.
And the way that you test whether or not it is in the marketplace. So
yes.
If you buy in the marketplace,
but there is no. Yeah.
Within a certain period of time.
Right.
Then you can go back and you can demand.
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe it does work both ways.
I think it does, unless I'm mistaken. I'm pretty sure it does work. Does work both ways. Which does mean that the exactly a sixth, I feel like that never happens. There's no, you can never have an exact sixth because you're right. Sorry, it is. Yeah. Well, I guess it depends how you. Yes. Yeah, that's true. So you're right. It wasn't 120. It wasn't 120 to 140. It's 100 to 120. Okay. Fine. Fine. Okay, so we'll leave it there. Hopefully, we'll pick up again in 2 weeks.